Howdy, and thanks for tuning in to the Homestretch Podcast, 101 plus tips for navigating assisted living and nursing homes. I am your host, Chad Schmidt, and here you'll discover the questions to ask from the researchers, professionals, and the institutions so that you can make a more informed decision. And today, I'm excited to talk with Dr. Philip Allapat. He's a pulmonologist who specializes in sleep disorders, and he works over at Baylor College of Medicine. Today, we're going to talk about sleep disorders and the use of a therapy called a CPAP. Dr. Allapat is also going to talk about how sleep affects the daytime functioning of an elder. And lastly, he's going to share a special discussion that you may want to consider having with your facility that your loved one is in. So let's tune right into what Dr. Allapat has to say about sleep and CPAPs. 3 months ago, I'm out walking around in a shopping center, and there's this van. And on the side of the van, it says Medical Supply Company. And I said, "What is the item that you sell the most of?" And he says, "The most expensive thing or the highest markup item that we have is a CPAP machine, and we sell more of those than any other piece of equipment." I realized there's probably a lot of people over the age of 65 that are either in a nursing home or having to be transitioned into the care of a professional through an assisted living facility, that their caregiver or their loved one, their parent or their child, has to bring this piece of equipment that they might not even know what the heck it's for. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to share with us why this piece of equipment is necessary as a form of therapy. Could you share with us a little bit about what a CPAP machine does and what it's used for?
Of course. The CPAP machine is essentially a glorified air pressure delivery device. So all it does is it blows air through a tube, which is connected to some kind of mask that you would then comfortably place on your face so that that air pressure that's generated by the machine is able to be felt in your nose and your mouth and transmitted to the back of your throat, where if you've been diagnosed with obstructive sleep apnea, there is repeated closure of the upper airway during sleep. So
does that mean it sounds like this idea of somebody suffocating in their sleep, that they would realize that this is affecting them or they're affecting their loved one?
I mean, I'm not sure how suffocating in sleep, whether that's translated always to obstructive sleep apnea. In fact, it's not always. But certainly somebody who is snoring and choking and gasping and has these episodes of difficulty breathing in relation to the snoring and the choking and gasping, those symptoms are very common in patients who present with obstructive sleep apnea. And some people are just more predisposed to developing obstructive sleep apnea. You don't necessarily have to be obese. You don't necessarily have to have a thick neck. There are a whole bunch of predisposing factors, mostly related to anatomy, that contribute to this upper airway closure during sleep.
Interesting. Okay, so the first thought that comes through my head is the CPAP machine mainly used for people that sleep on their back most of the night?
Not necessarily. Definitely obstructive sleep apnea in many patients is worse when they sleep on their backs, mostly because the weight of the tongue and the anterior upper airway tissues tends to allow the upper airway closure to occur more easily. And that's why a lot of patients who have obstructive sleep apnea seem to sleep better when they're sleeping on their side. But a CPAP machine, if properly fit, should work quite well when you're in the supine position or sleeping on your back, as well as when you're sleeping on your side.
Okay. The thought that's coming through my head is I'm laying on my back and I'm breathing, and the muscles in my throat
or in my airway are collapsing on themselves and not allowing me to breathe properly while I'm sleeping?
Correct.
And so the CPAP machine forces air so that those muscles don't collapse on each other? I'm sorry, I'm just answering this in the form of a question because I'm not as familiar about this as you are, and I'm sure the listeners that are coming across this episode aren't really familiar with it either.
Yeah, and certain things predispose to having more severe obstructive sleep apnea, including obesity. And what that does is it increases the volume of tissue that surrounds this tube, if you will, which is your breathing tube. And that breathing tube is in some places a little more floppy than others. And if you are trying to pass air in and out, normally breathing, and when you're in sleep, the airways, which are normally supported by musculature that keeps the airway open, those muscles tend to relax during sleep, then that tube is more predisposed towards closing and repeated episodes of closing that then contribute to the obstructive sleep apnea.
I could just imagine, because I don't have a CPAP, this idea and concept of wearing a mask over my face to be able to sleep at night, it's got to be uncomfortable.
Patients who suffer with significant obstructive sleep apnea often recognize very quickly that this air pressure, which is used to keep that airway open during sleep, improves their breathing so significantly and improves their ability to maintain sleep so much that they very quickly find that they can't actually sleep well without a CPAP once they recognize how much their breathing is improved with the CPAP device.
The point of this whole episode is to figure out how this actually benefits an elder person. So my question is, what percentage of the people that come in to visit or to get some type of sleep test are over the age of 60?
I don't know the exact percentage, but it's pretty close to half of the patients that see me are definitely over the age of 60.
And what percentage of those people that come in to see you actually need to have this type of machine to help them?
For me, that may be a little bit of a statistic that is difficult to translate to the general population because I work in a referral center that deals with sleep disordered breathing. So I get patients referred to me who have difficulties, say, using their CPAP device. I wouldn't necessarily use the percentages of how many patients I see have obstructive sleep apnea, because that would probably be around 80 to 90% of the patients that I send for testing have significant enough obstructive sleep apnea that warrant therapy.
Well, and I can only imagine that it's got to be more than 50% of the people that actually have an issue with sleeping that actually go in to get testing. There is a big enough problem for them to actually be diagnosed with this disorder that they need this form of therapy and this equipment to be able to sleep.
If you use the symptoms of daytime sleepiness, snoring, witnessed apneas, meaning somebody has watched you stop breathing in your sleep, the prevalence of obstructive sleep apnea in that patient population is somewhere in the order of 75 to 90%.
Well, and also, they got to probably have issues with their cognitive functioning as well, right?
I mean, if any of us who've had a poor quality sleep, we can attest to the fact that the next day we're not functioning at peak capacity and we're often forgetful and not necessarily able to focus and concentrate on the tasks that we need to do. So if you can imagine somebody who is having something that bothers their sleep, you can very easily see how this can be disruptive to the daytime function of the patients with obstructive sleep apnea.
Well, I'm also now a little bit more intrigued for those individuals that have to go into an environment where professional care is needed. And I'm talking about a 70-year-old that's living in assisted living. What effect does a CPAP have on that individual?
It would have to be tailored to the individual, obviously, because if a patient does not have obstructive sleep apnea, I can't imagine that a CPAP device does anything for that patient. However, if a patient who has significant obstructive sleep apnea and has been treating their sleep apnea with a CPAP device is now required to move into some type of care facility, and that CPAP device is no longer provided to them, then the ramifications could be quite significant and may range anything from inability to maintain sleep to increased daytime sleepiness, things like even increased fall risk, because you tend to not be able to maintain sleep and you try to get up out of bed when you're not so awake, and you tend to trip over things and not be able to see as well at nighttime and those kinds of things.
Well, the last assisted living facility that I went into was a memory care unit, and it's kind of depressing, to be completely honest. I don't know if you've ever been into one, but many of the people are in a sleeping state where they're in a wheelchair or they're sitting at a table or they're sitting in a couch with a group of other individuals that they're supposed to be either playing bingo, playing cards, having a conversation, or eating. And these people are falling asleep. And so I'm not necessarily sure of whether or not you can answer to this, but maybe it has to do with their ability to get effective sleep while they're in their bed that's affecting their ability to fall asleep during the middle part of the day.
Absolutely. That's certainly one of the concerns that could be yielding significant daytime sleepiness. But very frequently, patients in memory care facilities and such are often on medications, and those medications can cause sleepiness. These patients are often not able to maintain a normal circadian rhythm where they are awake and active during the daytime, which will allow good quality sleep at nighttime. And if they are not able to maintain good quality sleep at nighttime, then it affects their daytime function. You can see how quickly this can downward spiral here. So there are lots of factors that can contribute to daytime sleepiness, especially in patients in a memory care facility, but untreated obstructive sleep apnea is certainly a well-known contributor to this.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're bringing this up. I'm actually curious as to whether or not if somebody ever has a CPAP machine that's given to them as part of their therapy, as you call it, can it be reversed? Because I have never heard of an instance of somebody that has had been diagnosed with sleep apnea that is given a CPAP machine to help them sleep at night that actually gets off the dependency of using one to sleep at night. But can it happen?
Yes, of course. If the contributing factors to the upper airway collapse, which is the actual obstructive sleep apnea, if those contributing factors are improved or ameliorated, most commonly obesity. So we, at our healthcare institution, we have a weight loss center and bariatric surgery options. So we have patients who have significant obesity and significant obstructive sleep apnea who then will go through several therapies and lose considerable amount of weight to the point that their obstructive sleep apnea is then effectively cured. Patients with anatomic abnormalities that are contributing to their obstructive sleep apnea can have surgery to address those particular anatomic abnormalities. Now, granted, there aren't that many patients with obstructive sleep apnea who have very clearly defined anatomic abnormalities that lend itself to surgical therapy of obstructive sleep apnea.
What else do you think is important for somebody that's listening to this episode that has their dad that's 68 years old and is still able to function normally, but getting close to this point where they're going to need to transition into professional care and they're having trouble sleeping at night? What other recommendations would you give to that son or daughter that is having their dad that's getting to this stage of life where they're needing to transition and they're having also trouble sleeping?
I think, like anything, it's just proper attention to that particular problem. So consulting with a practitioner of hopefully sleep medicine so that all of these aspects can be looked at. And a proper evaluation is a rather exhaustive evaluation of the patient's daytime and nighttime activities, the medications, and symptoms that may suggest sleep disorders like obstructive sleep apnea, which may then warrant sleep studies to evaluate further. And then the proper application of therapy is necessary. There is research that there is a significant amount of difficulty in cognitive dysfunction, in anxiety, in psychiatric disorders that may be associated with untreated sleep disorders. And treatment of those sleep disorders may yield significant improvement in these difficulties.
This is fascinating. So it sounds like, if I'm going to break down what I think you just said, because I want to clarify, if somebody is anxious, agitated easily, and they tend to be a little bit more confrontational possibly, one of the contributing factors to them being so might be the fact that they're not getting enough sleep. And if that's the case, then they should consider seeing their doctor to get tested for a sleep apnea disorder or diagnosis. That's what it sounds like you just said, but I'm asking for clarification on that.
Yeah, of course. I think that's a very reasonable statement. Anything that can interfere with someone's sleep, as you know, eloquently stated by many people before me, nobody really understands exactly why we have sleep, but we certainly understand that there is a restorative, rejuvenative function to sleep. And if that sleep is not adequately rejuvenative because it is impacted by some problem, whether it is intrinsic to the patient or extrinsic to the patient, that patient is not getting the proper amount of good quality sleep, then I think it's very straightforward that there are consequences, and those consequences could be worsening of their underlying psychiatric disease, worsening of their cognitive dysfunction, worsening of their memory dysfunction, those kinds of things.
Wow. Okay. This is great. I'm glad that you're sharing some of this because I think it helps bring to light a possible answer to some issues that somebody might be experiencing with their parent.
Just to be completely clear, it's unlikely that there is one answer to something as grand as worsening memory function as you age or psychiatric disease or anything like that. There are often several contributing factors, but certainly sleep disorders, and in particular sleep disordered breathing, can be a significant contributing factor.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you bring that up, because many years ago I had a mentor tell me that if you have a heart problem, how many tests do you want to take before you actually find a solution? And the straightforward answer for any reasonable person is, if I have a heart problem, give me as many tests as it requires to find a solution. So the answer may not just be that there's a problem with sleep. There might be other problems that are going on as well. And that's why it's important for you to reach out to your primary care physician and enlist in the support to find solutions to make the remaining moments that you might have with your loved one, those memories, to be enjoyable. Is there anything else that you think is important for a listener to know about this topic of CPAPs?
The other frequent concern that we run into in patients who are in places like assisted care facilities or nursing homes and such is that the patient's family members are often not present during sleep when the therapy should be applied. And so there often is an educational effort that needs to be had with the care group at that facility to ensure that the patient is adequately provided the therapy and understanding of how to adjust, say, the humidification settings or even adjusting the mask and just to allow better fit and better use throughout the sleep period.
Past guests and episodes, as well as some solutions on how you can navigate through assisted living and nursing homes and the questions you should consider asking the professionals before making a decision on who to go with. Until our next conversation, I wish you good health and eternal love. Have a beautiful day. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Homestretch Podcast with Dr. Philip Allopat at Baylor College of Medicine. If you found what he shared interesting, consider subscribing to this podcast on whatever platform that you're listening to it on, and hop over to www.homestretch101.com where you'll find links to videos,